Welcome to my podcast, Patient First. I'm Dr. Naveen Somaya. I'm an Australian registered specialist plastic surgeon with 17 years of surgical experience. As the scientific convener of the Non-Surgical Symposium and a former president of the Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, my goal is to help patients navigate the complex world of both surgical and non-surgical aesthetics, but by understanding what is evidence and what is not. This, I hope, is going to help them realize their aesthetic goals safely and in a manner consistent with good clinical practice. This podcast is an extension of that legacy. My aim is to empower you to make the most educated decisions about your choices concerning your face and body aesthetics and your safety. Each episode, I will be bringing to you cutting-edge science and exploring surgical procedures in a modern, evidence-based approach to aesthetics. Plus, I will be inviting some esteemed guests in my podcast in the future to offer new perspectives. Tune in each week as together we explore the next frontier of surgical and non-surgical aesthetics. Welcome back to this podcast, Patient First. I'm your host, Dr. Naveen Somaya. I'm a registered specialist plastic surgeon and a committed professional to evidence-based plastic surgery. Last week, we spoke about trends in general. This week, I've identified a few trends that we're going to dissect and deconstruct to separate evidence from opinions. We will go through things in detail and make sure that we extract the buzzword-free facts from these trends, starting from abdominoplasty to botched surgery, rhinoplasty to lipolysis. Getting results right is not about following the crowd. Getting results right is about following evidence-based information and finding a professional who could translate that evidence-based information into results for you. This treatment is not generic. It is not one size fits all. It is personalized, individualized to your specific needs based on your specific biology, your aging process, your age appropriateness, and also to make sure that the balance is restored and not put out of sync. This is critical. With that introduction behind us, I'd like to disclose certain disclosures in the interest of transparency as mandated by the Australian Health Regulator. My name is Dr. Naveen Somaya. I'm a registered medical practitioner and a specialist plastic surgeon. My area of specialty is surgery with the field of specialty practice in plastic surgery. My medical registration number is MED00118989. I wish to advise listeners that information in this podcast is of general nature only and does not constitute formal medical advice. Surgery carries risks. It is advisable to seek a second opinion from a suitably qualified practitioner and bear in mind that results do vary from person to person. What is experienced by one person may not necessarily be experienced by another person. With that in mind, let's get into this podcast. So talking about trends, it's important to separate what is an evidence-based trend supported by information that is science, scientifically based, and scientifically validated, as opposed to a populist trend that is trending for the sake of mass media marketing, which unfortunately is not based on science. So on a social media networking site, they both look very similar, but it's important to realize that the differences cannot be poles apart. And this is when you have to use a discretion to see if this is science-based, because that trend is usually based on authoritative research, authoritative comments, scientific journals, scientific articles, opinions from key opinion leaders who then propel this into a real thing based on scientific evidence, as opposed to a marketing trend for the sake of marketing that gets momentum, gathers momentum, and snowballs into something bigger than what we ever imagined. So when it comes to plastic surgery, cosmetic procedures, makeovers, mild makeovers, extreme makeovers, trends tend to influence and kind of induce a bias in your thought process before you approach a consultative process with the specialist. And this is very important to consider, that when you encounter a consultation procedure specialist, it's important to go through these and say, I have been following certain trends. Are they real? is there evidence based behind that? And certain key elements of an invasive surgical procedure have always been omitted in a trending topic. The first trend topic that I would like to discuss is the surgical operation called abdominoplasty. Now, just before I start, it's very important for my listeners to understand that abdominoplasty is a major surgical operation that has significant risks and has to be performed in a manner consistent with good clinical practice. Now, there is a reason why abdominoplasty that we have seen over the years kept trending, sometimes up, sometimes flat, sometimes down. And it is not uncommon to expect certain fashion trends that highlight the need for an abdominoplasty for a better contour, as promoted on the social media sites. Certain celebrities who do have undergo abdominoplasty surgery may then come on fashion sites promoting certain styles of garments or certain styles of fashion that ultimately influences social media. So this will then trickle down and come into your feed for you to decide this is something for you. And prior to the 1st of July 2023, when cosmetic surgery was a highly unregulated industry in Australia, the advertising guidelines weren't clear. So we saw a lot of trivialization of the procedure. And this basically downplayed the seriousness of the operation, the significant risks of the operation, that made people think that this operation was something simple, straightforward, easy, with a straightforward before and after that mirrored what they saw on social media or a social media trend. And together with this, their popularity kept going up and going down. But the real interesting part of surgical abdominoplasty, it is an operation that is very powerful. It's focused on addressing a couple of key structural changes that have occurred that impact certain actions that the person could do before but is unable to do now due to things such as muscle separation, limitation of quality of life due to skin infections and skin rashes, due to the excess amount of skin as a result of either massive weight loss or massive weight loss following pregnancy. Now, these things are physical impediments that impact your life and your quality of life, and these can be addressed with the surgical operation of abdominoplasty. Although I mentioned abdominoplasty through the medical lens, a lot of my patients come to see me for an aesthetic abdominoplasty, just wishing that they had a different contour, a better contour to address certain key issues. Sometimes they may qualify for the medical reasons of abdominoplasty, and sometimes they don't. But irrespective of the qualification, the operation of a surgical abdominoplasty is still a major surgical procedure with a prolonged healing phase, with the extensive recovery phase that really impacts your lifestyle for the first 6 weeks following the surgery. And this message, unfortunately, does not get conveyed to patients when they access media from unauthorized sources or non-professional sources on social media and internet. And it is only at the consultation we make it very clear that this operation needs to have an understanding and acceptance of the need to prepare for, need to accept certain risks, need to be prepared for managing those post-operative phase to ensure at the end of the journey, you'll come out safe with the desired outcome that you wanted. The operation of abdominoplasty involves addressing a couple of key anatomical structures that have changed in the course of the life of my patient, either due to changes of life or lifestyle, pregnancy or pregnancy-related changes, massive weight loss, massive weight gain, or any other changes that can cause an excess of abdominal skin, a separation of the abdominal muscle, of the rectus muscle, and the excess deposition of fat that alters an aesthetic contour of the particular patient. As a consequence of this, some patients experience physical problems such as low back pain, pelvic pain, or other issues such as incontinence. Now, in the process of planning for abdominoplasty, extensive investigation is undertaken to ensure that the patient is medically fit, psychologically capable, emotionally ready, and has all the support systems in place logistically to ensure a smooth transition from the post-operative period to a good recovery. What is your home situation? You have support. Who can drive? When can you drive? How long do you take time off work? These are very important considerations before you embark on an operation like an abdominoplasty. Now, to summarize the impact of abdominoplasty on the patient, I usually tell my patients that it is like a back injury, but only it is in front, implying that simple acts of getting out of a bed, turning in bed, getting out of a chair, standing up, going down the stairs, going up the stairs, getting into the car, getting out of the car is not as easy as it was before the surgery. You just have to make extra time and take steps very slowly when you do these activities in the immediate post-op period of the first 4 to 6 weeks. Things do get better with time, but it does take time and you must be prepared for this, is my sincere advice to all my patients who undergo abdominoplasty. The immediate results of abdominoplasty surgery could be achieved after the surgical procedure, but the critical aspect is how do you maintain these results in the medium and the long term? The answer to that question is it is not only maintenance of health, but also maintenance of skin quality. So it's important to consider what are the drivers of metabolic health that can potentially disrupt and impact your outcomes following abdominoplasty surgery. You've gone through a lot of surgical procedure time to get to your result. It makes logical sense to maintain. So there are three key interventions, in my opinion, that make sure that you can stretch the longevity of your outcome following abdominoplasty surgery. The first is maintaining your good metabolic health. That is critical because that will influence whether you're going to gain more weight, could be both intra-abdominal fat or subcutaneous fat that can impact on your results. The second is to maintain a healthy diet and lifestyle that also impacts your metabolic health and can impact your results. The skin care to ensure that the quality of the skin is good. It will also add value to the results that you have achieved with so much of hard work and commitment. That's important for you to consider how you can best maintain that. Gut health is a very important concept because one of the fundamental problems with bad gut health is it tends to bloat. And if you have ongoing bloating or unbloating, as they call it, due to a variety of foodstuffs that you may not be tolerant towards, it can put a lot of pressure on the repair from inside. And as a consequence, the outcomes may not be as good as they could have been should you have controlled your gut health and ensured that your food tolerance levels are taken care of, investigated, and addressed. The next topic I would like to talk about among the trending topics is a very common popular topic called lipolysis. Lipo implies fat and lysis implies death. So this is a death of a fat cell by methods we're going to talk about. Now, why is death of a fat cell important? Because when you have significant amount of adipocytes or fat cells, it changes the contour of the body. Now, certain parts are more prone to small amounts of fat excess that makes the contour quite visible. And as a consequence, patients do not like the telltale sign that is conveyed by that contour change. The commonest one is a double chin, or the chin, a bit of subcutaneous fat under the neck, also known as submental fat. And that unfortunately indicates a certain viewpoint to viewers. So patients are not very happy to have an excess amount of fat in that area. Along with the excess amount of fat, the skin gets pushed down. So a combination of these two can impact how people view you. And people may be not very happy with that appearance. The second place of excessive fat deposition is the lower abdomen or the love handles. And the next place is around the knees and certain parts of the thigh and maybe in the back and the upper back areas. So these are areas that commonly bother patients. Now, methods to target fat loss or lipolysis. All of us know that if you go on a healthy diet, good exercise regime, maintain your metabolic health, watch what you eat, optimize your lifestyle, you will lose some weight. But in some cases, there are certain pockets of fat that do not respond to that. And unfortunately, it's the last small bit of fat that does not respond to the global impact of calorie reduction, calorie burning, exercise, and lifestyle choices. That is when people do what can be called, quote unquote, spot reduction of fat using injectable lipolysis or other method to do lipolysis, or is to extract the fat using small amounts of liposuction. Now, injection lipolysis is an effective method to inject a substance which is commercially available to interact with that adipocyte or fat cell to induce a chemical change within the structure of the fat cell and makes the cell membrane of the fat cell rupture and the cell die. This result is permanent because once a cell is fat cell is dead, cannot regenerate back in because the contents of the fat cell gets released into the system and gets absorbed. This method to inject a chemical into the fat to reduce the fat and then contour the area is very popular because it addresses some of the common concerns that patients do have. Now, the drawbacks is just like any other invasive procedure. Once you start injecting something under your skin, there's always risks of things going wrong. And your professional who does the treatment for you should have a very detailed risk assessment, risk discussion with you to ensure if you're the right candidate. And you should be aware of those risks before you say yes and agree for the procedure. Some of the risks are infection, excessive swelling, excessive pain, sometimes excessive discoloration of the skin are common. And unfortunately, if it's done badly, you could have a patchy contour or uneven contour. We expect a smooth contour reduction and the remaining contour can actually look quite aesthetic. But if it is done badly and the injection is placed at different levels, you may have a small amount of fat die closer to the skin in one area and deeper down in another area that leaves an unevenness of the contour, which could be very unsightly. The other more important thing is if you are a candidate for lipolysis by injection method, some patients who seek that methodology of treatment may not be candidates for injection lipolysis at all because the amount of adipose tissue or fat that they have in that area is probably too much for an injection lipolysis. And this is where a professional practitioner can make the decision and say, no, this is too much for the injection methodology. You may not be the ideal candidate. And if you proceed to do this, you may end up with more complications and less benefits. And this is the professional advice that a good practitioner who's ethical and evidence-based will share with you. And you should also question and not assume that no matter how much fat you have, you could inject lipolytic substances and achieve a result when in actual fact, something better, more safer would probably give you a better outcome in the short, medium, and the long term. The next training topic I'd like to talk about is a topic of septoplasty. Septo implies a septum in the middle of the nose that separates your right nostril and the passage from the left nostril and its passage. It is an internal structure that's not visible to the outside, and plasty implies a surgical procedure to modify that particular structure of the septum. So put them together, they become septoplasty. Now, septoplasty, I need to make a clear distinction between what is a septoplasty and a rhinoplasty. Septoplasty is specifically targeting the septum of the nose, not the nose. The aim is to identify and address any abnormalities in the septum, either a bent septum, broken septum, hollowed septum, or any other septal abnormality, either due to birth or life or trauma that can cause and impact your breathing passages, impacting the narrowness of the breathing passage and make breathing difficult. So these are reasons for having a septoplasty, which is usually done by a specialist in ear, nose, and throat specialty areas. And it is done, no cuts on the outside. It is done with all cuts on the inside, where the septum, which is the midline divider of the nose, is manipulated, repaired, removed, or readjusted to ensure that the breathing passages and its function is maintained. So talking about septoplasty, just bear in mind that this is an operation that is an invasive surgical operation, although the trending information on social media may portray it otherwise. It is an operation performed under anesthesia in a licensed hospital by a specialist surgeon and a specialist anesthetist looking after you. It has to be treated with the respect it deserves, need to be the ideal candidate, prepared well for the surgery, be compliant with the post-operative instructions of what your specialist provides, ensure that you have plenty of support at hand in the immediate post-operative period. You need to see your specialist at regular intervals post-surgery to ensure your healing is going according to plan. Medications prescribed should be adhered to ensure the best possible outcome. The risks and the complications will be discussed with you at the time of your consult with your specialist surgeon, who can then advise you what is the best optimal time frame when you can come off your quote-unquote post-operative downtime time frame. In other words, when can you resume normal activities, your normal sporting activities, your normal social activities, and how will it impact your taste? How will it impact your sense of smell? All those important questions need to be answered, and you should have answers for them before the operation. Because unfortunately, when it is a marketable topic trending, you may not get the downsides to this procedure, which are important considerations in your decision-making process. The next trending topic is the operation of rhinoplasty. Now, it's a very common and popular trending topic because it involves a very important facial structure of the nose. The common reasons why people have rhinoplasty for cosmetic reasons is to improve the appearance of their nose. This has got nothing to do with improving the function of the nose, because a rhinoplasty for functional reasons is done based on what else has gone on in the patient. But for rhinoplasty for cosmetic reason is done with very specific concerns the patient has. The nose may be too broad. The nose may be too upturned. Nose may be too downturned. These are all physical attributes of the nose that they would like correct. Now, this is an operation, is major surgery. This major surgical procedure performed by a specialist in this particular procedure needs to have a specialist anesthetist look after your safety during the operation, needs to be done in a proper licensed hospital, and you need to be monitored post-operatively. And during the post-operative phase, you should have access to your specialist rooms for ongoing advice, ongoing follow-up to ensure you have the best outcome after your rhinoplasty. When it comes to rhinoplasty, it's very important to remember that it's an operation that is very commonly redone after a few years, because things do change. Patients' perception of the result changes. Patients' lifestyles do change, and hence the interpretation of the results also changes. Circumstances change. The face is also aging. The breathing difficulties may come up later. We do not know when they will come or if they will come, but they do come. That is when the patient will be bothered by the operation and its results, and may seek a revision or a redo of a rhinoplasty. There are other reasons why patients may seek the rhinoplasty is because of a substandard aesthetic outcome. And that is a real possibility. And that is why when you choose a specialist, you must make sure that you must choose a specialist who is an experienced person performing rhinoplasties. Now, prior to the 1st of July, 2023, a lot of non-surgeons or people with no medical, who had just a medical degree but no specialist surgical qualifications, were allowed and were performing rhinoplasties. Now, the standard of rhinoplasty performed by somebody who has no formal specialist qualification, as opposed to somebody who had formal specialist training and experienced in specializing in rhinoplasty, is chalk and cheese. It's as simple as that. So your choice of a professional to perform rhinoplasty surgery is an important consideration, and probably should be the most important consideration before you embark on this journey. Now, there are multiple specialty societies in Australia that have plastic surgeons who are specialists in this field of rhinoplasty, and the Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons are a group of plastic surgeons who specialize in aesthetic surgery of various types and forms. So a visit to their website can help you understand the wide variety and the number of practitioners who offer these services, and then you can then individually contact them to schedule a consultation. Just like every other surgical procedure, it is important to not just have one consultation. Please have many consultations so that you know who is a good rhinoplasty surgeon. The Australian Society of Ear, Nose and Throat Surgeons also have experienced rhinoplasty surgeons who perform a wide variety of both functional and aesthetic rhinoplasty. And their website also will have a very good list of people who perform rhinoplasties, and in some cases, combining a rhinoplasty with a functional rhinoplasty or additional sinus surgery. So these are valuable information points for you to seek a real specialist. The next trending topic is botched. And in the context of plastic surgery or cosmetic surgery, botched implies something that has gone horribly wrong. This is not a complication that would occur in the normal scope of practice. This is an exaggerated version of a complication that has occurred due to something that has gone spectacularly wrong. Now, botched has got two pillars to botched. Why does botched happen? Botched happen because of practitioner's attributes and as well as a patient's attributes. Now, what are the practitioner's attributes that can result in botched potentially? Number one is a practitioner has used methods to avoid providing the five pillars of surgical safety to patient. When I talk about the five pillars of surgical safety, it is surgery by a registered specialist surgeon, anesthesia by a registered specialist anesthetist in a surgery performed in a licensed hospital, surgeon available to provide postoperative care, and the surgeon having admitting rights in a hospital to escalate postoperative care should the need arise. These are the five core pillars of surgical safety. And if the practitioner or the surgeon is unqualified or unable to provide these pillars, that is when things go spectacularly wrong, both at a level of the individual operation site, whether it is a mieloplasty like facelift or rhinoplasty or blepharoplasty, and the general overall body habitus of the patient having an infection or another major complication. The surgeons who tend to not provide or not care about the safety of the patient also indulge in aggressive marketing techniques, aggressive sales techniques, unethical marketing, do not adhere to official title usage, trying to use false and misleading title techniques to entice the patient into signing up for surgery when they should be cautioning the patient, slowing down the process to ensure the outcomes are good. These are the factors that occur, and we have seen this pre-July 1, 2023, when the media was full of stories of how people were botched, and the common thread was people were misled. Now, when you look at what are the patient factors that can contribute to botched. And the single most important thing we advise patients is to research, research, research. And once you've done your research, you can seek an opinion, but it's more important to seek a second opinion and probably a third opinion so that you know that the information provided to you does not compromise your safety. Now, if patients make an impulsive decision, rely not on evidence, but on trending opinions, and do not do the due diligence of considering the fact that surgical procedures are not easy, they require downtime. I need to have a realistic view of this, need to be prepared to manage the post-operative downtime and have a second opinion, then these are certain patient factors that can contribute to being botched. The impact of botched is not just the patient. Unfortunately, it is the patient, the patient's caregivers, sometimes the patient's family, the patient's social circumstances, the hospital community, and generally the healthcare system as well pays a price, because the cost of managing botched across the system is far more than cost of providing a good outcome the first time. And this is a fact that has to be borne in mind when making your choice of plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery, any surgical operation, your choice of a proceduralist, choice of a provider, and how you prepare for the consultative process, how you prepare for the operation and the downtime. I cannot really talk about botched if we do not mention medical tourism for cosmetic surgery. Now, we all see patients who've had cosmetic surgery overseas, some very good, some average, and some not so good. But important part is, how do the people who end up having complications following surgery overseas, what is the recourse for them? Now, unfortunately, it's a fact of the matter that if you approach an individual surgeon and expect him or her to look after you for complication that happened overseas, the practitioner may or may not choose to accept you as his or her patient. That is a fact of life, right? So your recourse to have someone rectify the complications, depending on the complication. If it is an acute medical complication, such as infection, bleeding, or something that needs urgent attention, usually our public hospitals are extremely well catered for and staffed with competent plastic surgeons who can look after you through the public hospital system. But if there is any aesthetic complication, such as a unsatisfactory aesthetic outcome or a asymmetry or inability to function well following the surgery, that is when things become a bit tricky, because not many surgeons would be willing to look after complications of other surgeons. And that is a reality of surgical practice. So it's important for patients who are considering overseas tourism and cosmetic surgery as part of a overseas tourist package to factor in what will happen if things go wrong. How will I be looked after if things go wrong? As an important question to answer in making your choice. It was a real pleasure having you on my podcast. This is the last podcast for the season 1, and we were able to cover a wide variety of topics that forms the base core or the foundational pillars of what is ethical and evidence-based plastic surgery and cosmetic surgery. We've taken you through a journey of practice, history, legacy of healing, trends to make it all very interesting. I'm already preparing for season two, and I would like you to join me in the season two of this podcast, Patient First. In season two, we will be talking on many interesting topics that are covered in the non-surgical spectrum of aesthetics, especially considering the fact that the non-surgical symposium is going to be held in June 2024. And that meeting invites the best and the brightest in the non-surgical aesthetic space. We will have a whole cohort of international speakers who are experts in the field, and we will have, in addition to them, some of the key scientific advisory committee members of the non-surgical symposium who will be coming on season two. Not to forget trends, not to forget information, not to forget evidence. We will be adding a lot more of that. If there's any topic that you would like me to consider, if you have a message for me, I'd request you to please contact me through my office website. I look forward to seeing you in season two. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Patient First. I hope you found this podcast useful. Remember, I'm always listening. And if you have any questions you would like me to answer on the show or upcoming episodes, please connect with me via my clinic website. Thank you.